Welcome to the Marketing AI Sparkcast, where AI meets modern marketing. Hosted by Abhi Varma, a global leader in marketing, AI, and innovation, each episode brings you real conversations with leaders putting AI to work in strategy and execution. This episode is brought to you by Spark Novus and the Marketing AI Pulse community. Here's your host, Abhi Varma.
No one is Googling you anymore, or they're Googling less of you. AI is answering our questions at this point and deciding what we see and quietly changing how every brand gets discovered. Today, we are in for a fascinating conversation with Todd Sawicki, who is the CEO and co-founder of Gumshoe, one of the leading platforms in the world of AI or LLM or answers, SEO, whatever you want to call it, but the new world of SEO, as I refer to it. And he joins me to unpack what that means for marketers and how brands can stay visible in the age of AI discovery. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So let's just start with, what do you guys call it? LLMO, GEO, AIO, and what is your take on what all these terms mean?
I love the calling it just AI optimization or AIO. Personally, GEO is a guy who comes from the world of paid and performance marketing. I built a DSP and that ultimately got sold up and lives off within a company called Teads today. And to someone who's done anything in the world of paid, GEO means geo and geo targeting. I'm like, really? Are we really going to try to adopt a term that sounds like something we've kind of been using for another purpose somewhere else? So it always struck me as kind of weird that GEO popped up. And then some people proposed AEO as an answer engine optimization. And could you like say that five times fast? AEO. Like, I swear to God, you couldn't have picked a more difficult thing to say if you tried.
Yes.
Right? Like, come on, people. Like, can we make it easy? And I'm like, why can't we just call it AI optimization? Like, why are we trying to like outthink ourselves here and come up with some esoteric term when if you're a CMO, if I say AIO or AI optimization, you go, oh, I totally get what that means. And so that's sort of like where we're kind of aligning ourselves is if I have a vote, I don't know if I have enough votes, I'd pick AIO. But you've seen probably more commonly GEO or AEO as the two more commonly referred to terms. Again, if I lose that battle, I lose it, but I'm going to at least put my stake in the ground for something else.
There you go. I hear you. So, Todd, before we get into this conversation, it's going to be a fun ride today. For our listeners, maybe give us a little bit of a background about yourself. I mean, you come from the world of digital media, from the Disney Channel to a bunch of startups and now Gumshoe. What first drew you into marketing and the technology world, and how did you land at Gumshoe?
So I, even coming out of college, I was an economics major, and which means I kind of a stats head, and quickly got put into, even at the Disney Channel, I was in a customer acquisition, subscriber acquisition role, performance marketing, right? Oh, I could run a spreadsheet. Great. The marketing team needed someone to help figuring out cost of customer acquisition and how much it cost, you know, lifetime value and profitability of campaigns and so forth. And that was my start. I was a spreadsheet jockey fundamentally. And then I just happened to be at college. This is now 30 years ago when the internet was getting started. And I just happened to be coming out of school when like literally the original version of Netscape, the original browser, the precursor to Chrome was getting started. And at the Disney Channel, on my floor there, I was the first person to have internet access over the corporate network at my desk. And then that, you know, and it was kind of funny because back then, this is again the mid 90s when the internet was rolling out. When my first hour to college was just at Price Waterhouse, where I was just in the consulting group doing pure number crunching and things like that. Uh-huh. And they had started rolling out internet access. And so to help us with research and pulling facts and figures related to the businesses that we were analyzing. And so when I got hired at the Disney Channel, I walked in my first day and I was like, oh, do you have internet access to the woman who was setting me up, the IT woman who was setting up my computer? And she's like, well, no, you have to get literally the CFO of Disney, like corporate, has to sign off on anyone who gets internet access. And I'm like, well, I guess that ain't happening. And she joked, yeah, like nobody has internet access. Like, yeah, actually our the head of our office, the VP, the head of my team used like her fax line to with an AOL like modem to dial out to get internet access. Like talk about a corporate security like hole, right? Whatever. But that's what people did back then. This is, you know, dating it back in the days of the internet launching. It's sort of fun time capsule to think back on. And so, but as she was wrapping up, she goes, she literally said, screw it. Today's my last day. I'm going to give you internet access. What are they going to do? Fire me? And so I had internet access and I was the only person on the team in this floor, right? On the marketing team at Disney in New York, where the office I was in, who had internet access. So I became like the guy who became suddenly like the internet guy for all things, anything internet. You know, started thinking about, you know, internet marketing and whatever. And so that's what started this journey, was suddenly I was the internet guy. And New York and the whole Web 1 era and the rise of interactive agencies like agencies.com, New York had kind of this interesting early internet startup phase. And that's what got me interested in doing startups, was getting plugged into that community in New York. Uh-huh. Eventually moved out to the West Coast because that's sort of the nexus of internet, the internet startup world. And that was what led me down this path of doing a bunch of internet startups. And as I started going, getting into this world, I ended up working at a search toolbar startup as search was taking off and the rise of Google was happening. Mm-hmm. And then that led to, I ended up doing getting into social marketing as social was starting to take off in the late aughts, right? In terms of working with the first generation of Facebook apps like Slide and things like that going way back. And by the way, the guys, the Slide app was a whole bunch of PayPal mafia guys who went from PayPal to Facebook apps and social. And then getting into that led me to getting and starting the DSP startup that I ran, and which was like performance and programmatic and paid. So I went from search to social, and then it was programmatic because programmatic was taking off. Like I just happened to be the guy who stumbled in from, you know, the new thing to the new thing to the new thing. And then after, you know, paid and was ran that company for like a decade. And then suddenly looking else, what else should I be doing? Ultimately, but a lot of the things that you think about these channels was they're ultimately customer. You care about them, search, social, paid, because they're customer acquisition channels. That's yep. fundamentally the problem that you're solving. And so that's probably the common lens of how my marketing tech career has been thinking about, right? Which is even at Disney, I was helping them do subscriber acquisition. Yeah. And so this is like, as a numbers guy at heart, performance marketing and customer acquisition is sort of like something I can geek out on and, you know, get into CACs and lifetime value and ROAS and things like that. I can spreadsheet with the best of them. And as I was looking, you know, after the DSP, looking for kind of what's going on with the world and obviously the rise of AI, what you started hearing stories about was really the fundamental existential shift going on in search. Traditional Google style search and the rise of zero click searches. Suddenly Google traffic is declining precipitously. And I'm sure everyone listening is fully aware of this. This is not any great insight. The insight that just, oh, everyone's talking about this because suddenly if I'm seeing on my key keywords, 30, 60, 90% drops in traffic. Not just, and by the way, the key thing for me was, it's not just drops in organic traffic, it's drops in paid traffic, because Google is pushing even paid ads below their AI answers.
Right.
Right. That tells you if Google's willing to sacrifice paid because of the rise of AI, this is a really big shift in what's going on.
Pay attention.
And sure. Oh yeah. And so suddenly then if Google traditional Google traffic is changing and they're now installing AI answers instead in AI mode and whatever they're calling it at the moment, AI overview, AI mode, AI answers, they've used all three names. And it's a big light bulb moment to say the world is fundamentally changing and AI is here. And what also you're starting to hear stories, obviously, is the one channel that marketers are seeing grow when they look at Google Analytics or whatever platform they're looking at, Adobe Analytics, what have you, suddenly they're seeing the rise of referrals from ChatGPT and Perplexity and what have you. And that was sort of a light bulb moment of marketers desperately want to understand what's happening and what is this new thing. And if it is going to be the thing that replaces search, then I better be thinking about that. And that was sort of it. It's like, how do we, and the way we think about Gumshoe is as a product, which is we help brands understand what AI thinks about them and then what to do about it. Right. And that's, I think, the key thing here in terms of how do you as a marketer understand this potential channel and then kind of corral it and manage it and then, quote unquote, optimize for it so that it drives ultimately traffic and revenue for you. That's fundamentally why any marketer is going to care about AI search. Is it going to drive revenue for you? Is it going to help grow your business? And the journey of all those startups is like, just happened to me when the new thing shows up, I've gotten involved in the new thing and helping marketers figure out how to manage and take advantage of that channel. And that just, it's AI is kind of the fun, cool thing to do that, but that's what started it. And then working with marketers, so trying to understand how they thought about it, what do they need to learn about it. And that led to us building Gumshoe as a platform to help marketers better understand what AI thinks about their brands.
Very cool. I think you are the acquisition guy then, right? Like for sure, like even with Gumshoe. So, you know, the name's super interesting. It caught my attention and I love some fun name stories. Tell us a little bit about that.
I didn't necessarily understand the history behind it until we were kind of riffing on names. And because what we fundamentally do is help brands understand something, research things and what have you. And we're looking at different things around researching, looking up, analyzing, understanding. And someone kind of mentioned and brought this up as Gumshoe. And I said, oh, that's kind of a goofy name. Okay, fine. But he said, no, it actually means something. I'm like, okay. It is slang for detectives from like the 1940s. And what it refers to is detectives used to wear when they wanted to sneak around, because back then you hard shell shoes were the norm, and the hard shell shoes make clicking noises and they're right. You hear them walking a mile away. And so detectives would start wearing rubber soled shoes, and they used to call rubber things gum back then. And so gum shoes refers to rubber soled shoes that detectives used to wear. So they were, their slang for them was they'd be called gum shoes. Like that was what kind of like a nickname for a detective. And right. So that's where it came from. And so it's this idea of helping you kind of unlock and learn and analyze AI from a brand's perspective. So that's sort of the name behind it. It was kind of fun and it kind of stuck. So that's where it came from. But it's a cool sort of like, I had no idea the history behind it until we were kind of riffing and brainstorming names. And I have to give credit to the team who kind of came up with it. Someone who had like was into like film noir, kind of like that era is where the name kind of comes from.
Yeah. I mean, it fits in a lot of ways. Your tool is being the detective to how brands think people should find them. And so is your mission at Gumshoe really that, like, you know, brand discovery, learning what you said earlier on how AI finds the brands and what people are talking about it? Or is it also to tell marketers what to do about it and how to get found better? Is it a little bit of both? Because I see
it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think over time it shifts more into the latter of the way we think about fundamentally the value of if you can help what marketers really want to do, because it shows up all the time. And the way it works, if you and any listener, you can go to Gumshoe, you can try it for free. You don't have to put a credit card in. You can run an audit on your brand and a product within that brand and kind of see what AI says about it. And it'll tell you how often are you recommended by the various models and against different customer personas or target customers of yours. And the point there is that when you look at that and you say, oh, I'm generally people aren't doing as well as they wish. Fundamentally, you want to do better. And so they look at this and we tell them you might be in 70% of the recommended 70% of the time, or maybe you recommended 5% of the time or 1% or 10 or whatever. The next question they often ask, and I need t-shirts that say this, that say, okay, now what? And fundamentally, it's like, great, Todd, you tell me I'm doing great or I'm not doing so well. And even if you're, quote unquote, doing well overall, we're often highlighting specific personas, because one of the things about LLMs that I think is really important to understand is that unlike traditional search, which doesn't really personalize answers at all, the LLMs are building profiles of you the minute you log in and put your email in. They understand where you work. They're looking you up. They're looking everything they can find about you attached to their email. They're using that to understand information about you, because what they're trying to do is personalize their answers and give you the right answer. If you're interested in tennis, they're going to recommend different things for like shoes than if you're interested in hiking or running or whatever. Yeah. And I think that's the value of what LLMs do, is they really can understand information in a way that traditional search couldn't, because traditional search didn't really look at the semantic or contextual understanding of words on a page, whereas AI does. And so therefore, what as a marketer, you start to understand there's all these nuances, and so you want to know what to do. And part of the way we think about then is what we have to do then is give you a roadmap based upon sort of what we find to help you as a marketer. Okay, great. How do I interact? And fundamentally, what we think we're helping marketers do is how do you manage AI as a channel, right? As a research, it's not an insights tool. It should be fundamentally thought of as a channel. And so it's like a channel management kind of perspective of, all right, if I'm going to manage AI, how do I do that? And how do I interact with AI so that it best represents me? Because the analogy I always like to give about AI is you think of AI as you walk into a Dick's Sporting Goods. And we've all seen that giant wall of shoes they have, right?
Yep.
And there's a salesperson in front of it. And you walk in, you say, I need a new pair of shoes. The salesperson, think of the salesperson as the LLM, as AI. And what are they going to, are they just going to turn around and grab a random pair of shoes? No, they're going to say, oh, well, what are you going to, right? We've all had this experience with ChatGPT, right? You ask it a question, it has the follow-up question. It doesn't just statically give you an answer. It will interact with you. And it will try to get more specific to it so that it can really give you an answer. It's like, oh, you want a new pair of shoes? Well, do you need athletic shoes? Do you need dress-up shoes? What do you need? What is the purpose here? And right. So think of that salesperson as the LLM. Like, it needs to find out, oh, what are you interested in? If you're a runner, are you a casual runner? Are you a marathoner, right? There's information that needs to happen. And so the way we think about it is like, just if you are a brand and you were selling into Dick's Sporting Goods, you train and run, you generate content to train those salespeople. You run training sessions you send reps to go into the stores to train all their salespeople to tell them like why your pair of shoes are better than the next guy's pair of shoes, or why your pair of shoes are, these are the tennis shoes and these are the running shoes and these are the hiking shoes and why they're different. And so as a brand, you need to think of it kind of the same way, which is, oh, I'm now going to need to manage AI as my representative.
Right.
And so part of the way we think about it in terms of brand, like, we're trying to help you understand first what AI thinks about you and your products. So then we can kind of turn around and help you. Okay, knowing what they think, now let's move that model information, create content, push to inform the LLM so that they better represent your products. Just like you'd create content to train a salesperson at a retail store.
Right.
You need to train LLM, kind of interact, teach LLMs, like what they need to understand about you and your business and products. And when you kind of explain it that way, I think to marketers, it suddenly like changes it from this scary black box, I don't know what these machines and blinking lights are, to of, oh, I see. If I treat it like a representative of me, like a channel representative of me, a reseller, that it changes, like, oh, I totally get then what I need to do. I totally understand, like, if I'm feeding it content, I'm like, just like I'd feed content to a sales rep in the front of Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah.
I would do kind of the same thing. And that's how we think about this, which is a brand, which is, okay, there's, yes, we need to help you understand, like an audit, like where you stand. And then that gives you a roadmap of things you should be potentially doing differently to help LLMs better understand your business.
Yeah, love that. Love that analogy. Thank you for sharing that. Now, for marketing leaders and CMOs who are tuning into this podcast, right? What I hear a lot, well, we at SparkNovus, my company, we work with marketing teams and CMOs, we hear this a lot, where in the world of SEO, what kind of input they needed was pretty predictable. You know, you had the technical aspect of SEO, on-page, interlinking, content, and then you had the off-website work that needed to be done in terms of backlinks and credibility and some little bit of PR and what have you. And that was, and then you had, you know, an insights in the Google Search Console and analytics and all that kind of stuff, which was pretty, your input effort and your output results were pretty predictable. That is not the case in the world of AIO, right? So what, in your opinion, how would you explain to a CMO or a marketer the practical differences between, you know, what the level of effort that may have gone into their SEO initiatives and how that would sort of differ now in the world of AIO?
In some ways, SEO to a CMO is often this esoteric thing, like backlinks and link structure. Like, think of the insane amount of debates in the SEO community that happened for years between is it a subdomain or a folder? Like, that was just this raging debate amongst SEO folks, hardcore SEO folks, for years. Right? Just raging debates. And if you were a CMO and you heard and like witnessed this debate, you'd be thinking, this is like a scientist arguing about, do I want to use some esoteric ingredient for this or that? Like, it's at a level of specialization that is beyond what most CMOs would ever care about, right? It was like, and it just, that was kind of, I think, SEO and its reputation. It was kind of this technical dark art sort of thing that Jill in the basement worried about. And that was that. Like, right. You know, it was like speaking a foreign language, like speaking Klingon too, right? It's like Trekkies. Like SEO is kind of this like Trekkies. Like they could talk Klingon to each other and no one else in the world would understand it. And you kind of knew it kind of was important, but fundamentally it was like this hyper hardcore specialized thing. What's interesting about AI optimization is when you kind of get into it, it's much more of a content marketing, product marketing exercise. And the way that we take in terms of understanding what AI thinks and what it says and how it works, which is, to your point, AI fundamentally is probabilistic. It's not deterministic. Like SEO is deterministic. Like a certain link would show up, a certain link structure would happen, and a certain thing, like a certain site, we get ranked higher. Basically, you could kind of boil down SEO. SEO geeks will hate me for saying this. Fundamentally, it was a popularity contest. The most backlinks won.
Yep.
And that was it, right? Just whoever was the most popular thing often ended up being, you know, in terms of and backlinks are votes. Like it's like popularity contest for voting for your prom king or queen.
Right.
Whoever got the most votes won, no matter how good or bad it mattered. And we've all seen lots of examples where that's the number one link, really, on Google. All right, whatever. Just like sometimes, you know, the prom king wasn't always the best person. It was just whoever was the most popular, right? That's sort of like the thing. And what's interesting about LLMs is they're fundamentally probability machines. They're designed to better understand the nuance of the world. There is no one answer that's universal, right? There's kind of a bell curve of answers for almost any question. And they're good at dealing with that nuance. And so that also means that if you're a hiker, you can get recommended a different pair of shoes than if you're a runner, and they understand, and they can, because they look at the actual words and relationship between words to understand the context. And so what they do is they measure the probability of words happening in a particular order. And so at their heart, they're a probability machine. And so you'll get different answers. Different people get different answers. And that's why the profile of users matters, and why they're trying to get context around you, and how they personalize is they can kind of take advantage of this probabilistic distribution of answers. And so what I would like to think about LLMs is, if you ask an LLM a question 25 times, you're going to get a range of answers. And it's going to be a bell curve of answers. And it's like any CMO understands research and surveys and statistics and understands, right, that there's a confidence interval if you ask a survey and why we have a certain number of respondents. And because it's trying to get sort of the probability that the set of answers you see in a set of surveys, it represents the population of people.
Right.
And so the way I like to think about LLMs is effectively what the LLMs have done is they've surveyed the corpus of humanity, the internet. And they kind of understand the range of answers that the internet gives to a series of questions. And when you ask it a question, it's rolling like a probability dice. And it's kind of like if you call someone on the phone, do a phone survey, one person will give a different answer than another person. But if you call 2,500 people across the United States, you have a 95% confidence interval that that's going to be representative of the entire population of the United States. And LLMs, when you ask a question, are like calling someone. It's like, I like to say, they're like a survey application. You're calling an individual.
Right.
And so if you ask a question of an LLM, you're like the one person getting asked on a survey. So you want to ask more than once, twice, three times, four times to see the range, the distribution of answers. And so that's partly what platforms like ours, we have to understand how LLMs work, and we have to be designed that if we're going to effectively what we do is we ask prompts to the LLMs on your behalf as a marketer. We help generate those prompts. We help you understand, like, what are the types of prompts that people are asking in the world? How do you then? And then we start creating chats around those prompts. We basically create synthetic users, persona agents, whatever term you want to use, to engage the LLMs and ask us. Then you ask these prompts more than once, and you sort of get the distribution of answers. For instance, we've all seen where we ask ChatGPT, hey, I'm interested in a new pair of shoes. They won't just give you one. They'll say, oh, here's three or four or five options. Typically, what we see across the LLMs is they'll give 3 to 8 recommendations. And so if you ask the prompt again and again and over time, you'll see a distribution of companies that get in those slots. And they actually do a really good job, the LLMs, of sort of trying to capture as much of the distribution of companies if you ask it again and again. And so we track this where you'll see, oh yes, the most popular brand might get recommended 70% of the time related to a particular prompt. But then if you look at the distribution, if you're like a smaller company, a startup, you'll see if you ask it 100 times, you might end up seeing 75 companies get mentioned, where the first two might be kind of the same, but they'll, the LLMs will kind of drip in the distribution of companies that they've come across the internet. And so I think that's the thing about LLMs is they're not deterministic, they're probabilistic. And part of why platforms like ours exist is how do you capture that distribution? So you sort of capture the entirety of what they might know and answer. And so you learn that over time and you get to see that distribution of answers. And it's kind of an interesting thing. If any CMO who's kind of interested in insights, analytics, and surveys, playing with platforms like ours is a rabbit hole of time, because suddenly you start to see like, oh, look at that. That's a cool insight. And what happens with the way that we work, and I mentioned we generate chats. So what happens is we've registered as a chat application with the LLMs. And what we do is we say, hey, LLM, I've got this user who has this profile who wants to ask this prompt as if it were a real person. Mm-hmm. And then we have a real chat back and forth between us and our platform and the model. And then we can analyze that chat and we get to see the whole chat. Like you have the ability as a marketer to dive in and look at the actual brand mentions and what you see. And we ask, oh, they recommend these three companies. And then we do a follow-up. It says, well, why did you recommend these companies? And the LLMs will give you a detailed answer. Like, why did I recommend this company? And when you read that as a marketer, it's like reading the summary of the best focus group like you've ever had. And it really helps you understand like why does the LLM recommend this and what is it thinking, what its preferences are. And what you realize is it's a product marketing. Like they're responding and they've kind of consumed the entirety of your product marketing and are now regurgitating it in their own interesting way.
Right.
And so you start to see these product mentions and these product descriptions and like why they rationalized answering recommending product A versus product B. And it to see those product mentions and its understanding of your products is fascinating. And your competitors too. Like you get to see all this. That's just, it's a total fun rat hole for any marketer who wants to learn more about how does the world think about its products and why does it like features A or B. I've seen this happen again and again is the minute they start reading that, you start reading all these chats that we've generated through these synthetic users. It really right. becomes fascinating to a marketer to read and learn from and understand. I had plenty of users of mine who've responded, and we've had 4,000 companies have signed up since we publicly launched 6 months ago. They've generated over 10,000 of these quote unquote brand audit brand reports that have created 70,000 of these synthetic users, these personas, these brand personas that we then do. And from there, those brand personas have had 10 million chats.
Right.
Over the last 6 months. So lots of this, I've seen lots of this data. That's really fun and interesting to kind of play with. So when I'm talking about how we analyze those 10 million chats and look at the trends, but anyway, where I'm going with this is I have plenty of users, they look at that and they go, Todd, like when I see this answer where I show three companies that got recommended and why they got recommended by the LLMs. And they're like, Todd, this is like, you did my competitive messaging framework in like 5 minutes. To what I used to spend thousands of dollars doing focus groups and detailed research and downloads of competitors' product, you know, PDP pages and things like that. Like suddenly, like this is really cool and fun, and why I think marketers are really finding this to be a fun time, like to have access to this type of feedback and information in minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's fun and powerful. Like you've seen, right, Abby, you've seen this too. And, you know, the same reaction of like, you start looking at this detailed information the LLMs are giving you. And it's like, wow, this is cool. This is so fun.
Absolutely. Now, with all the data that you guys are seeing, you know, the 10 million chats and that sort of thing, do you see different LLMs interpret the same kind of information differently? Like Grok versus ChatGPT versus Perplexity versus Google?
Yeah, it is. That's a great question. And the models are absolutely trying to specialize in different ways. Mm-hmm. And for instance, Perplexity, like it's launched its own browser and it's incorporated a cart and it's doing, it'll auto load things into the cart and based on your recommendations and things like that. It is very focused on products and helping try to like drive purchases. And that's kind of where it's specializing, where it links more to like e-commerce sites, for instance. Okay. Whereas ChatGPT, as an example, if you look at the answers, tends to be a little bit more location-based. Localized services, it likes directories, it links to more location-based sites and services. Like it loves, like ChatGPT loves Google Business and Google Local profiles, as an example. Those are like store pages, like store listings and things like that. So it's optimizing a little bit more for local services, just interestingly enough. And so I think that's the type of things that exist is models. And Anthropic, for instance, is very tech-focused. And it's like Claude Code, you've probably heard about vibe coding. Like it's probably the most vibe coding friendly or optimized model. So it's a little bit more tech friendly. Like if you, so if you're a selling SaaS,
right,
for instance, Anthropic's going to be the model you care about. If you're more product oriented and e-commerce oriented, maybe Perplexity is the model you're more going to care about. If you're more like, oh, like I'm a localized business, then maybe I'm going to care more about ChatGPT and what I want to optimize for. But that's fascinating. It's like different cars, like different, some car brands, like Porsche is a sports car brand and Toyota is a family car brand. And I think we're kind of seeing the models trying to differentiate themselves that same way where they're focused in different ways and with different use cases in mind, which I think makes total sense.
Right. No, I think that's super interesting to learn. Now, you mentioned, you know, the world of SEO earlier where, you know, that world was dominated with, you know, marketing tools, you know, the SEMrushes and the Ahrefs and the Mozes and everything. Now, you know, with obviously they're, you know, within the SEO world, how do you see, and they're all sort of adapting to the world of AIO now, right? So you see fundamentally that class of MarTech tools versus a tool like Gumshoe, and Gumshoe isn't the only one within this AIO field. Do you see them sort of merging those two classes of technologies, or what is your take there?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, the traditional SEO tools have been a little bit more focused on the sort of traditional technical SEO style of approach to the problem. And I think that's kind of their bias and focus point right now is if you, right, when you sign up for SEMrush and or Ahrefs, they're very keyword oriented and keywords just don't, and by the way, the concept of rank in LLMs doesn't even exist. Like there is no concept, like you're not first, whatever, the answers change, they're personalized. Like we like to think, you know, talk about, you know, mention rate, visibility. I think that's, so it's a slight, even it's a slightly different structure. There is no concept of keywords. Like people don't search with keywords in LLMs. They ask questions and very detailed questions. And so it's a very different experience. And so I think that's part of it is they're, if they have a bias, I think they're a little bit more biased to a quote unquote more technical understanding of how fine you might optimize pages and you might do things. And they have the tools and things that, that help you address that, like schemas and sitemaps and things like that, which is where I think they're biased for. Whereas our point of view on this is, A, how do you capture the way the models really work, the way we think about that, which is this idea of, I mentioned earlier, this idea of personas. And so the way we work is that when you start using Gumshoe, we will generate a set of personas. And this is who we and the LLMs think are your top target customers, like classic marketing personas. And we, I mentioned we turn those, and those personas then individually will generate chats. And so what I mentioned earlier is we're trying to help you as a marketer understand what LLMs think about you, right? And I think that's kind of the way we're thinking about it. It's a little bit more product marketing, a little bit more market research, kind of an angle to how we think about it. And then what we're really trying to do is understand sort of the way those, the almost the brand preferences of the models.
Right.
Yes, there are some technical aspects to it. And it is important to make sure your site is crawlable and consumable by AI crawlers, for sure. There's elements of that. And we'll scan your sites to help with those points of view. But really what we think the value is from our point of view is that, oh, I'm trying to understand how the LLMs are personalizing their answers for individual personas. And then if I understand those preferences, then as a marketer, as especially as AI moves more and more from just recommendations to agentic shopping, where it's actually making purchasing decisions on people's behalves, how do I elucidate those preferences? And there's lots of evidence that the LLMs are personalizing their answers using personas and marketing profiles the way we always have. Like there's, anyone's done paid, right? There's about 100, 150,000 profiles or segments that most people can get bucketed into. And it seems like LLMs are kind of doing the same thing. Like people who like this, like that, you're in this type of segment, you're going to have these types of preferences. And we're trying to help identify those preferences from a brand standpoint And I mentioned earlier, we've generated over 70,000 brand persona relationships with regards to LLMs and kind of surfacing these preferences. And that's how we think about it, which is, let's say we need to help you understand how LLMs think about it from a brand persona relationship and a product preference standpoint versus a more technical aspect to it. Like, okay, you want to have a conversation with the LLMs. You want to train them so that they believe your product is the best for these target customer segments. And so that's the way we think about it. One of the members of our team is a PhD candidate at the University of Washington in their AI program. And his PhD thesis was he analyzed citations, like the sources. Like when you ask, when the LLMs will, or about half the LLMs will actually tell you the web pages that they use to come up with the answers. And so what his PhD thesis is, he built a mathematical model that compared answers versus the source content. And like, how do the words, were they similar, related, whatever, as a means of kind of like reverse engineering, how does content influence answers that the models? Right. And so what we've done in terms of building Gumshoe is taken his research and work and kind of now reverse engineer that, where we analyze the chats that I mentioned we generate and use that as a means to help understand the model's preferences with regard to your product category and your target customers. And then by looking at the chats, we can analyze the chats of what they said in those answers and then use that to build a predict what you need to be saying as a brand instead of what you're currently saying, so that the models will want to pick you versus someone else. So if A leads to B, we can then say, okay, well, we know B, then let's make A prime, and we can make predictions around that. And that's sort of the academic research that's powering Gumshoe and how we're thinking about this, right? In terms of as a marketer and versus traditional tools, and traditional tools don't have any concept of any of this stuff.
Right.
They think about keywords and backlinks and link structure and, well, link. There is no concept of backlinking in LLMs anymore.
Right.
And so that's kind of what we're seeing. And when we think about the way, like a big difference between traditional search and LLMs, we, amongst those 10 million chats, right, we've analyzed millions of these cited sources. And what we've done is we've looked up their traditional SEO rank. And it turns out that 50 to 90% of the cited pieces of content by the LLMs have a traditional search rank higher than 21, meaning they're page 3 and beyond.
Right.
And so, yes, you've probably heard as a CMO, I'm just hearing that I can just, traditional SEO is all that matters. And by ranking Google, I'm going to rank in the models. Not necessarily, because what this tells you is that the models are absolutely crawling Google and Bing search index. There's tons of evidence of that. So I'm not saying they're not doing that. They are. But what they're doing is, think about what the LLMs are doing is they're using their traditional Google search rankings for URL discovery, like content discovery, but not content determination. And think of the LLMs are a machine, and machines have infinite patience. Whereas a traditional, right, we've all heard these stats, right, about traditional Google. 1 out of 100 people go to page 2. On Google search results, 1 out of 1,000 go to page 3, and like 1 out of 1,000,000 goes to page 4, and nobody goes to page 5.
Right.
So if you have these deep links in Google, it's like cool, but doesn't generate a lot of traffic. But LLMs are machines, and machines have infinite patience. So they can crawl the 100,000, 10,000, million links on a search term and then find the best link. And our data, right, this that I was telling you about. So what they're doing is they're not just picking the most popular thing that's been SEO baited to death. They're trying to find what they think is the correct thing to say in an answer.
With the context. So
that's exactly with the context of the question and the user and everything else. And so, but they can look and analyze. And so this is our data, which is again, 50 to 90% of the links cited by LLMs have a traditional SEO rank below 21, right? That's the key fact there is that yes, traditional SEO helps you with URL discovery. And so the models will at least know you exist. But it does not mean if they don't think you're the right answer for the prompt, they're not going to put it in. They don't care how popular you are on Google. They want to put the correct thing. And I kind of describe it as like they're solving the problem of traditional search. Like you know there are things buried in Google's results. It's just too hard as a user to look at 1,000 links, 100 links, 10,000 links. You can't do that. But AI solves for that. And that's kind of what's cool about AI is it's like it's good at finding the right information. And that's, we think of AI search as solving and being a better version of search. It makes total sense now. You can see why it's getting more and more popular.
Yeah. So from a point of view of CMOs and marketers, what should they focus on if they want those AI models to recognize and recommend their brands more often? I know it's not one thing, but what is the general approach should CMOs and marketers take?
So there's sort of like, there's three things that we like to say people should do, right? Yes, you make sure your site is crawlable by AI. Like the amount of times people have blocked AI crawlers. We just had an example of looking at a site where they're like, oh, we're not ranking. I don't know why. And then we scan there like, well, because you're blocking all their AI bots. Like, well, what'd you think? So yeah, make sure your site is crawlable. Step one. So it's at least, you know, visible to a, if an AI crawler can't read it, they're not going to obviously point to you. That's kind of problem number one. And there are still people blocking AI crawlers, which is kind of fascinating to me. So make sure your site is crawlable. Step one. Step two is that AI does reference certain type of content, both on-site and third-party content. And in those 10 million chats, we've analyzed those millions of links that they say they reference as to why they answer their question. And when you, it turns out that 30 to 40%, depends on the model, of their links, the most popular category of sites that they link to are brand sites. And when they, among, and so that's the plurality, the number one category of sites that they link to are brand sites. And you're like, really? Yes, because they want canonically correct information. And what's the most canonically correct information about a product? It's often the PDP.
Right.
So one of the things you want to make sure, right, your PDP, for those not familiar, product description page, product detail page, what have you. And so that's, you want to make sure that that page is as encyclopedic as possible about right. your product and product category. And so the next thing that that LLMs, which is where our platform comes in and the things that we do, is that the next types of pieces of content that they link to on brand sites are FAQs and knowledge-based articles. Because what do those do? They're intended to answer questions for your customers. And the LLMs like to model questions and answers that they come across online and sort of take advantage of that. And so that's the thing that they do, is that they're looking for information for you to feed that. So the second thing is make sure that you're generating a corpus of quality FAQs and knowledge-based articles. The last thing, of course, is to make sure that you're getting mentions on the internet by authoritative sources, writers, what have you, Reddit forums, core forums, third party, and by academics. They love academic mentions. Oh my right. God. So if you can get academics to write about you and mention key things about your products, that is, and we're helping identify some of the people who are tracking and the sources yeah. and who are the people. And so that's the type of thing, which is yes, get authoritative mentions of your products from people who, especially academics or other industry experts, credential experts, is a great way to get visibility and get the models to sort of pay attention to you.
That's amazing. Now that's so insightful. And I know we are short on time, but to our listeners, we will be doing a AI in action series as part of the Marketing AI Pulse community. You can learn more about it at marketingaipulse.com. You can sign up for the AI in action, where Todd and team will actually showcase the Gumshoe product and talk about the features and capabilities. So do not miss that. But Todd, before we sign off, what is your, you know, recommendation for people who are just kind of dipping their toes in? Give them one tool, one idea, one advice, one piece of advice to get going.
As said, you can go, everyone can go to Gumshoe. You can go plug in your company, see what it says. Because the reality is, if you ask LLMs about yourself or your own company where you work and your products, it's going to flatter you. It will say nice things about you. It wants to please you. And so you're going to go, if you go to ChatGPT yourself and ask about where you work, it's going to say you're wonderful and your competitors all suck. But that's not what it's saying to the real world. And if you want to see this, go watch the season premiere from this fall from South Park, where one of the main characters, his name is Stan, his dad kind of has fallen in love with ChatGPT, because all it does all day long is say what a great idea he has. Every idea he has is wonderful. And so that's the problem with ChatGPT, is it's a sycophant. It's there to flatter you. So don't trust what ChatGPT says to you. Use platforms, whether it's mine or others. Go play with them. No credit card, is required. Go sign up and kind of see what it says. And that's a great starting point, because I think you'll be fascinated to learn some of the things it says and potentially some of the things it's not saying or hallucinating about. More importantly, we were talking with someone earlier today and they're like, yeah, we have a mango product, but it's calling it mango orange. And that's definitely not one of the things. We're going to have to figure out how to fix that.
Awesome. Well, Todd, thank you very much. That was a fascinating conversation. Appreciate your time.
Happy to do it.
Awesome. So guys, you know, as you heard, AI is changing how people are finding everything, including your brand. And if this episode sparked an idea shared with another marketer who's trying to figure this out by themselves, be sure to follow Todd Gumshoe, myself, and Spark Novus on LinkedIn for more conversations like this. Until next time, keep the spark alive. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Big thanks to Spark Novus and the Marketing AI Pulse community. You can join the community at marketingaipulse.com.